Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Thursday edition. Kristen Bry, how are you?
I'm great. How are your, how's your jet lag? Back to normal?
No, I'm still using an alarm clock, so that's a very unusual thing for me. But I'm ready for this show today.
Flex.
I'm coming out hot.
I know. You are fired up.
Look, I understand that nobody in government wants leaks, and they want us to do things the way things should be done, and we want certainly to protect our interests over in our country and overseas. But then I heard Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, you know, he of the cheap suits and the excessive hair care products, talking to the media like they're his lackeys.
They summoned the media.
Yeah,
for
he summoned. I saw that word. Summon the media so he can lecture them about what media should actually do. Like he's actually somebody that would understand media because he's basically a car salesman who's, because of his context, has worked his way up to that position. And I just said that. So we have a couple clips of him chastising the members of the media assembled for this conversation about the, and it all goes back to this leaked intelligence report, which has to do with the bombing of these nuclear facilities in Iran and how maybe, just maybe, they didn't work out exactly as the president of the United States has said they worked out.
There are so many aspects of what our brave men and women did that, because of the hatred of this press corps, are undermined because people are trying to leak and spin that it wasn't successful. It's irresponsible. And folks in this room are privy to that information because of the proximity here in the Pentagon. It's an important responsibility. And time again, classified information is leaked or peddled for political purposes to try to make the president look bad. And what's really happening is you're undermining the success of incredible B-2 pilots and incredible F-35 pilots and incredible refuelers and incredible air defenders who accomplished their mission. Set back a nuclear program in ways that other presidents would have dreamed.
Look, your job is not to lecture the media. Your job is to tell us what actually happened. Those things will be determined, just like the story of Iraq and all the things.
Or be more vague with what happened.
Yes.
Instead of declaring it was completely obliterated if we don't know that for sure.
No responsible member of the press, media, whatever term you want to use, are going to listen to Pete Hegseth lecture them about anything. And if you do that, you shouldn't be in the media. Your job is not to make things look glowy and fun and we got the mission accomplished. That's not your damn job. If we want that, we'll go to Fox News where they kiss the president's you-know-what every damn day. That's not your job. Yes, there's a market for that, and unfortunately, some people in this country have sort of signed on for that nonsense. That's not me. Do your damn job and tell us what did or didn't happen, or say we don't know yet. But your job is not to assemble or summon the members of the media and then lecture them because somehow you're the top guy that understands everything. You know very little about what you're doing. You know very little about the media because you're basically, as I said before, a used car salesman, all dressed up, all polished up, who apparently has built himself a makeup facility in and around the Department of Defense. What's that about? How much did that cost? Did Elon get to the bottom of that controversy, that spending? Look, do your damn job. This is not complicated. What happened? Were the strikes impactful? Did they shut down their program? If they didn't, when you can, tell us what's next. What's coming for our military? What's coming for our world? I was overseas when this happened. I can tell you there was a lot of apprehension in that country and across the world about where is this story going. You better get your story straight. And if you have leakers, look among the knuckleheads you probably appointed to some of these positions. Maybe they weren't ready for prime time because many of them know nothing about the Department of Defense. Many of them know nothing about the military. Many of them do not deserve the seats in which they are serving. Pete Hegseth. I'll just leave it at that.
Steve, deep breath in.
Deep breath in.
Deep breath out.
An important conversation.
I'm sure we're going to talk more about this with Bill and Joe tomorrow. But when we come back, we're going to have a conversation with something that I feel like we all can actually agree on, except there's a couple holdouts in the Wisconsin legislature, and it has to do with women's health and probably has to deal with someone that you love. So stay with us on Point Taken. Welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen Bry. He is Steve Scafidi. And our next topic, this is a bill that I think I have talked about every legislative session since I have been doing radio. So that's like 4 or 5 years. And so
it's been a long time.
It's been 3 legislative sessions, and this is the 3rd time. Twice it has not been able to get it done, but it is one of the most consequential pieces of health legislation, especially for women's health, in Wisconsin right now. It is called Gail's Law. And so joining us now to talk about the bill and what it's going to take to get it over the line is on the phone. We have Representative Amanda Nedwuski, who is one of the authors of the bill, patient advocate Linda Hansen, and Dr. Jennifer Bergen, who is a radiologist with Radiology Waukesha. Welcome, everyone. Representative, let's start with you as far as just explaining what Gail's Law does.
Essentially, Gail's Law just closes an insurance gap for supplemental breast screenings. So if a woman has a mammogram, we passed a law in 2017 that she has to be notified by the provider if she has dense breast tissue. At that point, you're recommended to talk with your provider, whether it's your primary care provider or a specialist, of whether or not you meet the risk factors that would warrant supplemental screenings, maybe a breast MRI, regular MRI, or an ultrasound, or maybe some other type of technology that could better see if you have a detectable cancer. Because sometimes mammograms have a very difficult time detecting tumors or the presence of cancer in dense breast tissue. So many insurance companies do cover these supplemental screenings, but they don't cover them without cost sharing. This would close the cost sharing gap. So for example, if you are a woman with a high deductible health plan and maybe your deductible is $5,000 and early in the year you have your mammogram and you need a supplemental screening, but maybe that breast MRI is going to cost you $1,000, are you more or less likely to go ahead and pay out of pocket because you haven't met your deductible yet, that $1,000 for the screening? Or are you going to skip it because it's a cost barrier for you and, you know, you have other priorities or you can't afford it? So what we have found is too many women are skipping that supplemental screening that's recommended for them in if they're in a high-risk category, and they may be missing out on the opportunity for early detection. So Gail's Law would close that cost-sharing gap and require insurance companies to provide that supplemental screening at no cost-sharing cost to the patient so that they don't have to avoid doing that test until either later in the year or at all. So,
Representative, I've talked about this, like Kristen, on several shows over the past 4 or 5 years. I know this is a bipartisan issue. So I'm going to ask it this way. You work with these individuals in the state legislature in Wisconsin. Who's getting in the way of this and why?
Well, this is my second term in the legislature, so I did not work on Gail's Law last session. I know this is the third time around. This is truly not just a red or blue issue. It's a pink issue, and we do have a lot of bipartisan support. The difference this time around is that Representative Nedwuski is here to advocate, so I'm hoping that I have a stronger voice for women's health that can help get us over the line. It takes a while. Sometimes it takes 2 or 3 sessions to get legislation passed. I think that there certainly is some resistance from health insurance providers, but I'm working really hard to come to a compromise with them and try to understand why this common sense bill is something they're so resistant to. And they've got to do their jobs too. You know, nobody likes insurance mandates. I think that certainly there are a lot of people who think that this could be a slippery slope in terms of, you know, what else are we going to mandate insurance companies to cover? We've seen extreme cases of insurance mandates like the Affordable Care Act, where there's massive government overreach, and I think that that may have left a bad taste in some Republicans' mouths, and, you know, we have to sort of work with the data, provide the data, use the data to convince people that this is a common sense, not only life-saving, but cost-savings bill.
So, Dr. Bergen, thinking about the stats and the data that we do have, why is dense breast tissue an issue, like when we were actually trying to identify breast cancer?
Sure. So, dense breast tissue is kind of a double whammy. It first affects 40 to 50% of all women. So it affects many women. And it makes the mammogram harder to interpret. So on a dense mammogram, the breast tissue is whiter or denser. And breast cancers often look white on a mammogram. And so we're really hiding the cancer in that dense tissue. It reduces the sensitivity of the mammogram, so there might be a breast cancer there, and we just can't detect it. And that happens up to 50% of the time that we miss a breast cancer in women with extremely dense breast tissue. And the second part of the issue is that women with dense breast tissue have a higher risk of developing breast cancer.
And so, Linda, I've actually gotten to interview you before. And yes. So your story is exactly this, right? As far as you had a clear mammogram and had been having clear mammograms, right?
Yes, I had 15 clear mammograms, all clear, no problem. And I had a mammogram very end of March. And 5 weeks later, beginning of May, I noticed some pain in my right breast, and there was like a dent in it. And I thought, this is not normal. Mm-hmm. I called my doctor. I went in. My OBGYN recommended that I see a breast cancer specialist. I saw her. She examined me. And I said, you know, I know this can't be breast cancer because I just had a clear mammogram 5 weeks ago. And she looked at me and she said, I'm not going to be able to tell 100% until I do a biopsy. But based on my experience, you have breast cancer and you've had it for a long time.
What's the financial impact of that? When you have to have that additional screening, where does that take you as far as the person if your insurance company is not paying for that?
Well, it can be expensive. For me, my insurance company initially said, no, why are we going to pay for an MRI that the doctor had ordered when you just had a clear mammogram? You're fine. What are we doing here? And it took about a month to convince them. The hospital told me they would not do the MRI if the insurance company didn't approve it unless I brought in a check for $5,000.
Hmm.
I'm lucky I had a job that paid well. And so I did. I brought in the check. I was going to do it. And I got there that morning and they said, guess what? The insurance company just called. They're going to cover it. So then I only had to pay the deductible. And, you know, breast cancer is expensive. It's the most expensive cancer to get. The treatment for breast cancer is more expensive than any other kinds of cancer. And you find out really quickly that if your health insurance covers 80% of your bills, 20% can add up in a real hurry.
Got to take a quick break here. Our guests will continue after this on 620 WTMJ. Continuing an important conversation on women's health and the I think the importance of the legislature of the state of Wisconsin working with women, healthcare providers, all families in this state, because all of us have been impacted by this story. We're joined by Linda Hansen, a patient advocate, Representative Amanda Nedweski, who's the lead author of the Gail's Law Bill, and in studio, Dr. Jennifer Bergen. My frustration is significant on this because, as Kristen said at the beginning, we've been talking about this for a while. I guess let's start with the representative. What has to happen to make this bill go forward and get done and get signed?
Well, we have to be able to convince people that it's not going to increase costs, that it's going to save money. I mean, we are all truly affected by breast cancer. I think that there's overwhelming support for this bill because every single person knows someone, whether it's your mom, grandma, aunt, next door neighbor, best friend, someone you work with, maybe even someone you don't like who all of a sudden, oh my gosh, now I have some empathy because I see they have breast cancer. It is truly, you know, something that has impacted every single person. You can't get away from it. So we know that we have the support from the public and from the community. It's about the cost. So I come from a financial background. I've been a financial analyst for many years. And, you know, coming to the legislature, I wanted to make sure that I was always working with data-driven decision-making. And AB 263 removes the financial barriers to accessing technologies that support early diagnosis of breast cancer, which can reduce breast cancer treatment costs incurred by patients, insurers, and the healthcare system. So really, you're talking about early detection means a savings of many studies have shown that a 200 to 500% increase in cost for treatments at the stage 3 and 4 versus earlier staged breast cancers. So patients with advanced stage cancers require high cost treatments like chemo, like surgery, like follow-up surgery, and they have a higher chance of recurrence. So if you have early detection, you're naturally going to have a lot more lower cost in treatment. And also, when it comes to the impact on premiums, in states that have had this similar legislation in place for quite a while now, you're looking at 4 to 8% per member per month increase to private insurance premiums. That comes to about, you know, 80 cents to a dollar per year increase in premiums. We have to be able to convince the naysayers that this is a low-cost investment in
Representative, early detection. There's like 30 states that have already done this, right, Dr. Bergen?
Yeah. That's correct. And earlier this year, even Florida passed this law.
Florida, of all places.
Yeah.
And
Texas.
Very conservative.
And Texas.
How about that? They seem to get it done.
We're on the back half of this in terms of taking care of women in Wisconsin.
And you were saying that you see this a lot as far as women delaying getting the MRI because it's so expensive. Yeah. And then once they finally do get treatment, their cancer is so much further along.
Absolutely. We see it every day. I can recommend, I see a woman who has a high risk of breast cancer. She has dense breast tissue. I tell her, I really think you need to have an MRI in 6 months. We're doing enhanced screening for you. And now she knows that she has to pay a bill. And it might be $400, it might be $3,000, depending on where she has it and things like that. But it's still an expense, and she's weighing whether I'm paying for that or I'm taking care of something for my kids. And
then also just living with the unknown of like, I might just be walking around with cancer right now.
Right? Yeah. You don't really know.
Then the final word, as somebody who's living this story and has been an advocate for so long, and we've talked in the past, only got about 30 seconds. What should people do in the state of Wisconsin to sort of get this going?
There's a real easy answer to that. Your legislature is elected. They work for us. Please write a letter, an email, call and leave a voicemail. It's so easy. Just simply say, please vote for Gail's Law, or please make sure that insurance companies pay all the costs of breast cancer screening.
Linda Hansen, Representative Amanda Nedweski, and Dr. Jennifer Bergen, who specializes in the treatment of this issue with her work in the Radiology Waukesha, Medical Director of Breast Imaging and Services. Thanks for bringing this to our attention. This is a really important conversation.
I'm going to fall hard. Yeah, I know I am. When the clouds crack up, I laugh with them. There ain't no man.
Oh, happy Thursday, everybody. It's week winding down I've only been here for a couple days.
I was going to say, you've only been here for a day.
I'm ready for the weekend already, but we have a full show, full hour and a half left, plus an hour or two tomorrow to kick in before we head to the weekend, which is looking lovely weather-wise, which I got to catch up on.
You missed the heat wave.
I did.
How was the weather in Scotland?
60s and 70s. Gorgeous. Okay. As should be when you're on vacation. I just want to go back real quickly. I know there's other things we want to talk about, but That important conversation happens because of frustration. This should have been done a long time ago. And our friend Bill McCosh has been one of the people who have been outspoken on, and he's, last time I checked, a conservative Republican. Get this done. I understand that people get in the way and the representative, as politics are, they don't call anybody out. I get how it works. I don't like that, though. And the bottom line is, this is a classic problem with our current state of politics. Refusal of legislators to understand there is long-term benefit from making critical decisions early in a process, including breast cancer screening, that save you millions of dollars, even though at the front end you got to put up some cash. And that inability to understand it makes me wonder how smart you actually are, because it does make sense. I don't think Linda mentioned it when she was with us, but her care has cost millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Millions of dollars. When on the front end, when she got all these screenings that said, oh, you're just fine, but she wasn't, an MRI could have potentially changed that story. So $600, $1,000, a couple thousand dollars screening van, a really detailed, dense breast tissue screening could have saved everybody, insurance companies, Linda, everybody else, millions of dollars. Short-term ignorance, long-term gain. And I'm going to believe that till the day I die. That it's something that should have happened already. So anybody who's in the way, and the representative politically didn't call anybody out. But if you're on the side that says no and you're using the slippery slope argument, that's stupid. Don't do that anymore. It does save lives. It does save money, which last time I checked is sort of the goal of most legislators. So that's my take on
it. It's a good take.
An important conversation. One that should be had more often. And here's the deal. We're going to stay on this. Because all of us know people, I have friends, I have women that I know that have dealt with this. I know women who have passed away from this because they're not working for all of us, including those women who are dying and suffering for no reason other than your short-sightedness in this weird illusion that you're somehow saving us money when you're not. So be smarter than that. All right.
All right, Steve.
All right, hard pivots. You got me all worked up on
I know.
It.
I think I got you like a little emotional.
Well, it's silly to me.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, obviously, I don't think anyone's going to be surprised where I stand on this as far as, and it's not even, obviously, there's always the economics of all of it, but it's just the fact that how is healthcare this hard in our country? That it's this, we have this many sick people and it costs us this much money all of the time out of pocket, and the conversation and the debates with, and the pleading with insurance companies just for us to be able to get care. And, you know, it's one of those things where you have a lot of problems until you get sick, and then you have one problem.
Yeah.
It's your only problem.
Yeah.
And so many of us, if you live long enough, you're going to have to deal with that. And some people, it's much later in life than earlier in life, but just the compassion for knowing what it's like when you get some kind of diagnosis like that, and then you have to add on the financial burden of all of it on top of just fighting for your life.
It's piling on when those people are the last people that need that, and you're just sort of taking advantage because of your position to say, well, we have to think of the right, you know, all the rights of the taxpayers. You know what? Most taxpayers have dealt with this situation in some fashion, whether it's a family member, whether it's a friend or a neighbor, whatever. They understand the issue. And I would argue that if you put this up to a vote, it would pass overwhelmingly. So if you're on the no side on Gail's bill, Gail's law, you're not in the right. You're in the wrong. Maybe start understanding that. Maybe have a better fiscal responsibility long term versus whatever short term thing you seem to be playing here. Let's take a break. We'll pivot to some other stories. I just wanted to get that out there. And this was an important conversation that we will continue to talk about on this program, which is Point Taken. She's Chris and I'm Steve. And this is the biggest stick in the state, regardless of what anybody tells you.
Where'd that come from?
I just felt like saying it. Every once in a while, I like to just preach. I should have been a pastor or a priest.
Every once in a while?
Oh, look at that editorial comment inserted into my exit from this segment. All right. Quick break. 620 WTMJ. If you're in love a
woman, don't let her go. Welcome back to Point Taken. I think the Wisconsin Supreme Court maybe surprised some people yesterday. Did they surprise you, Steve?
No, I thought this was an easy one. The governor just picked the maps.
All right.
So it's like, I know some people are fired up. Hey, they're gonna make this fair and all that stuff.
So if you remember, one of the reasons why the Wisconsin Supreme Court race was such a national hot button issue, both this was admitted from Elon Musk, Hakeem Jeffries said the same thing, of why this was so important was because depending on who won the race, it was going to impact the case of the Wisconsin Supreme Court looking at our congressional maps ahead of the 2026 midterms.
Right.
Now, I always kind of called BS on that because, one, they had already rejected that case before. And, two, there hadn't even been a case filed and we were waiting on. So there was a new case filed as soon as Susan Crawford won by the Elias Law Group. And yesterday, lo and behold, despite the liberal majority, the Wisconsin Supreme Court rejects bid to reconsider congressional maps. And so, I don't know if that surprised people or not. I think for the optics of everything, it looks good as far as their ability to maintain being a objective court, and they're not just, you know, bowing to Democrats and trying to rig things for Democrats. But as you said, what people might forget is that when the legislative maps got challenged, it wasn't both sets, because first it was Governor Evers had drawn both maps.
Mm-hmm.
And then the challenge came that ended up going up to the Supreme Court and came back down of how they ended up choosing the Republican maps back in 2022. It wasn't both sets. It was just one. So the maps that we have were drawn by with the least change criteria by Governor Evers.
Yeah, and I think most Democrats would agree that they've made progress in their sort of quest to sort of take back the legislature. Their words, not mine. And I think they feel like it's fairer. Would you agree?
In the legislature? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It was hard to get less fair than it was. But
I think if you're a Democrat, you're moving in the right direction as far as how the districts are drawn. This one, again, seemed like a no-brainer because this was Evers' lines, right? So I don't know that.
You could. What they were arguing as far as the criteria going, how they were going to pick the maps,
right,
was going into the least change from the prior maps, and you can challenge on whether or not that was a constitutional criteria or whatever. But it's also like, I don't know, just we have we'd have two competitive districts, put up a good candidate, and let's see what happens next year.
Yeah.
But the other thing was, there was also a unanimous opinion Wednesday from the Wisconsin Supreme Court that ruled against Governor Tony Evers in his partial veto authority when it came to the $50 million that was supposed to go to the Department of Public Instruction mm-hmm. on this fight over how to fund the science of reading, right? Have you covered this much? I know I've covered
a little
it.
Bit, and I don't even know if I fully understand this. I know that there's this a pile of money they've been sitting on. I've had people that, who come on and advocate for the release of that money. Others have said, well, we're not ready to do that. I mean, this is back and forth between both sides.
So it's basically, well, what the fight over is that everyone, I think, can finally agree that the approaching things with the science of reading and bringing back phonics
yes.
is a good thing.
Absolutely.
And so that was passed in 2023 as mm-hmm. far as we're moving forward. Then there's this pile of money and how it's earmarked, that how to spend that money is the fight now.
Does that surprise you that they argue about, okay, so we agreed we could do this, but now we're going to argue about how we do this and how we spend the money.
Well,
it just frustrates me.
And I understand,
you.
And I totally understand that if this was an overreach, and it was a unanimous decision, that Governor Evers, it was an overreach. But there's also just a part of me that sometimes, all right, when we think of who we elect and the variety for the state legislature and the variety of backgrounds they have of their careers before being elected. We talked to Representative Ned Wesky earlier. She's a financial advisor. Mm-hmm. So she has a brain for finance, for money. We've talked to people who were teachers before. You know, it's like, and so they bring different experience to the table. But then when you talk about how to spend money for a program, do you want people who were like real estate developers or you want the people who are actually, their job is public instruction?
Should they listen to the experts?
Well, that's what I'm saying, is like, who do you want making the decisions of how the money is best spent? And you can say you think that there's waste in public instruction and everything like that. And so I'm not saying who's better, who's worse, but I'm just saying there are people who have better expertise of how the money is best spent and who gets to make that decision.
How about this way of looking at it? Regardless of what the issue is, whether it's funding for breast cancer that we talked about earlier, mm-hmm. or budget decisions, reading, how we do things at the federal level, I don't want one person ever being in charge of that decision, whether that's the president, governor of the state of Wisconsin, speaker of the state assembly. One person is not smart enough or should never have the power to just hold up something that most of us believe is the right
way. Should they have the power to block something from happening?
Yeah, which is basically what's happening. I don't like it. And until all of you, including the texters who both love and hate me in the last six texts, and thanks for both the love and the hate, because that's my wheelhouse right there. That means I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
You think I'm a less divisive person than you?
On some days. Not always, but on some days. But look, if you're the
obstacle?
The obstacle, it might be you. Look in the mirror, as Mike Ditka said many, many years ago, talking about the critics. Look in the mirror. It might be you. And that goes to all the people I just mentioned.
Anyways, back to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And do you think that this is enough to quiet some of the critics as far as them proving that they're not always just going, despite being a liberal majority, they're not always going to side
no.
with... Okay.
They're going to take the win and then complain about them tomorrow or today. It's the silliness of squawk radio or squawk TV.
As soon as the abortion case comes out, it's back to just the activist justices.
They always ignore the stuff that goes their way. Well, they finally made the right decision, but tomorrow I'm going to hate them just as much. That's the stupidity of all of this. This is where I, as someone who does what you and I are doing right now, gets frustrated by just the... Here's the reality. This is a lecture. I know you hate when I lecture whoever that texter was. I'm going to lecture you now. Most of the people doing what Kristen and I do have no life experience outside of doing this. You've lived a life. I've lived a life. I've done other things. I worked in the private sector. I was a public official. I have experience. My whole experience is not jabbering into a mouth because I think it's popular or it's going to fire my base up. That's stupid. But we've lived this life now for the last 30 or 40 years where that's what people want to hear. God, I love that guy. Mostly guys doing this. For all the stupid reasons you love anything. It's like, oh, that's the way I think. But how about thinking a little smarter? How about listening a little better? There's my lecture. Quick break. I know the
love that I deserve. All right, one of the things that also happened, maybe you saw this, maybe you didn't. Maybe you... in the plane as this came out. But earlier this week, Governor Tony Evers said he will not sign a budget that does not fund child care counts.
Right.
My Journal Sentinel op-ed for the week is saying this was the right thing to do. This is the proverbial sandbox, drawing a line in the sandbox. That was one of my jokes. and so I've talked about this many times. I talked about it with Brian Reisinger when he was here on Tuesday, that we talk about economics of just there's been economists who have come out and said, for every dollar you put into child care, you get $13 back.
Yeah.
And so I say that this is a very good thing to back and say this is the budget standoff. Where do you stand on this?
I agree with you on that issue. I think the governor is not going to get what he wants in a budget if we get a budget.
And that's what if he's not bluffing, and if they don't fund it and he doesn't sign it, then I think this could be it. Because I was having this conversation. I was like, do you think? Because it's very popular. It's a very popular piece of legislation as far as people, even without kids, understanding the obscene cost of it, right? And so it feels like an easy win for Republicans, but the more people I talk to, they're like, they're not going to do it.
It's the same argument I made before. Investment on the front end should reduce your investment on the back end, but no one seems to understand this stuff anymore because it's all simplistic politics nonsense. It's an easy one. You have to give people the ability to get out and work in the workforce and give them the flexibility they need to make that a viable option for them versus the alternative where they can't make ends meet and leads to a whole nother set of problems, both for the individual and for society. It's again, it requires a more complex way of looking at issues. The governor's got a problem here. One, people don't know if he's running. Two, I'm not sure he's going to get any kind of a budget that's going to make sense for him. Now, they've worked it out in the past. Maybe they'll do it again. I don't know. But this seems to be like sort of late in the game here. And I guess the law is you go back to the last budget and maybe that's good enough. I don't know. But it's not going to...
Well, it doesn't seem like the Senate has figured it out either. Even like there's unity on the Republicans and the Joint Finance Committee to move forward in the fight just being with Governor Evers. There's fighting within their own ranks.
Yeah. We got a good 11 o'clock hour coming up too.
Jeremy Jean.
Yeah. He's always good. Local news, urbanmilwaukee.com.
Interesting story.
And then an interesting story to start the hour, which... Who's your daddy? I guess is the easiest way
call
to tease that.
Call him daddy?
Call him daddy. We'll get to that. Kristen and Steve, point taken on 620 WTMJ.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
Hello, hello. Welcome to the 11 o'clock hour of Point Taken. Steve, have you ever been a suck-up at work? Have you ever been in a position where you're like, flattery's going to get me further?
No, but I know a lot of them.
Do you do?
Oh, especially here.
All right. Well, it seems that NATO's chief is putting the suck-up theory to the test when it comes to President Trump. So the NATO summit is this week.
Yeah.
And yesterday, I think I first saw the reaction from Marco Rubio and Donald Trump. But apparently... So we also played, was it yesterday or Tuesday, that the Trump's reaction, he dropped the F-bomb.
I was not here.
You were not here. So that was Tuesday. So after President's outburst over Israel and Iran for continuing strikes, despite the ceasefire, Mark Rutte, who is the Secretary General of NATO, offered this gem. He said, "Daddy has to sometimes use strong language." What?
Well, boy, that's some high-level conversation there.
And so immediately, of course, my millennial girl brain goes to call him daddy, which is, of course, the one and only Alex Cooper.
What is up, Daddy Gang? Welcome back to another episode.
Daddy Gang. All right. So in response to this, so, of course, it was also the fact that he called him Dear Donald and, you know, Mr. Trump. And there was a lot of flattery that was going into that, including the daddy. So Mark Rutte was asked about this. And
today you called him daddy and you sent a text message to him that was gushing with praise. Is this the way that you feel you have to act when doing business with the US president through flattery and praise? Isn't it a bit demeaning, and doesn't it make you look weak?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a bit of a question of taste, but I think he's a good friend. And when he is doing stuff which is forcing us to, for example, when it comes to making more investments.
So that was his defense, I guess. It didn't really address the daddy part. But then when Trump was asked this, what you can't see, because we're on radio, is Marco Rubio in the background just... I've never seen him laugh this hard, if I'm being totally honest.
Mark Rutte, the NATO chief, who is your friend, he called you daddy earlier. Do you regard your NATO allies as kind of children?
No, he likes me. I think he likes me. If he doesn't, I'll let you know. I'll come back and I'll hit him hard, okay?
No?
He did it very affectionately. Daddy, you're my daddy.
So weird. It's the whole thing is so weird. It's such a... Because it's the whole... You know the background of that word used in...
Porn?
Yes, sexually.
Yeah.
It's weird. It was a weird thing, and I don't know what's going on in the Netherlands, if that's more of an affectionate term, the way that a certain C-U-N-T is more of an affectionate term in, like, Australia and UK than it is here, but it is odd to me. But what are you going to say?
At a baseline level. When she asked him the question, are you essentially sucking up or whatever, how she asked it, the correct answer would have been, yeah, pretty much, and then left it at that.
But here's my next point of, it worked. I mean, basically what I read is that President Donald Trump has now issued a full-throated endorsement of NATO and its defense mission after this summit this week. And so to a certain extent, I was like, well, flattery will get you somewhere.
So basically the kisses, beep. You can get away
with what you want.
Get what you want. Is that what we're learning here? Is this a win for anybody? It's a win for people who like stupidity, I guess. Because this is base level stupidity. It's just nonsense. We're talking about, you know, weird terminology that the President of the United States and others are using when we're supposed to be talking about high level, really important negotiations involving strategic defense. Instead, we get
questions about who's your daddy.
Who's your daddy? Yeah.
Are you familiar with Zaddy?
Huh?
The term zaddy?
No.
With a Z?
No.
All right.
Should I be?
I'll brief you with that in the commercial break.
Not appropriate for broadcast?
Nah. All right. When we come back, the one, the only, Jeremy Janine from Urban Milwaukee will join us to talk all things happening around the Brew City. Stay with us. It's Point Taken.
The biggest gig in the world has finally returned. Summerfest is here, and WTMJ will be broadcasting live from the Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin Mobile Studio, right on the lakefront. Come by, say hi, meet your favorite WTMJ hosts. It's WTMJ at Summerfest all fest long. We are Wisconsin's radio station, WTMJ.
Hey, it's WTMJ, Steve's Committee for Advent Snoring, Tossing and Turning, Restless Nights of Sleep. Don't put up with that. Do something about it. Get up off your chair or your bed, out of your bed. And do something about that poor sleep and whatever you do for a living, the tired mornings at work. I did something. I went to Avent, quick 30-minute visit, talked to their docs, a couple of them on my first visit. And they figured out for me, along with a simple sleep study, that mine had to do with my sinuses and nasal passages. Easy, common, easy to fix, 30 minutes or less, short procedure. Since that moment, 5+ years ago, breathing better than ever, thousands of people have gone through the same procedure. And they've also reaped the benefits of those nights where you fall asleep and you wake up rested and refreshed. If you struggle like I used to, take the time to see how Avent can help you to find out breathing well and sleeping well can make your nights better. Go to AventKnows.com, schedule an appointment today, because Avent knows when you breathe well, you live better.
Here's to sweet summer days together with friends and family in Wisconsin. To discovering magic in every moment. And to reconnecting through a world filled with wonder. Wow. Here's to supper club celebrations and dancing until the sun goes down. Here's to those who Wisconsin. Plan your summer getaway at TravelWisconsin.com.
Oh, welcome back. But you didn't go anywhere. You're listening to me do that live read for Evan. Yes, I know that because I've been around for a long time. Kristen Bry, Steve's Committee Point Taken. And as you all know, on Thursdays, that means in this slot, this segment or two or three, we are joined by Jeremy Janine. You can see his great work at UrbanMilwaukee.com. One of the best sources for local news covering all kinds of stories. What are we leading with today, Jeremy Janine?
Let's talk about roads.
Roads!
How exciting.
There's a pothole for everyone in Milwaukee.
Certainly are.
Alderman Peter Burgelis forced this conversation to come to a head. It started during the budget debate.
He's been active lately.
He's been active.
He's the flag guy, right?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. We'll get to that in another segment. But
all right. Looking forward to that.
He's also the trampoline guy, another tease for something coming up. Mm-hmm. He planted a flag back in the, pun intended, back in the budget debate in September, October, and November of last year. About, okay, Milwaukee, its roads are in bad shape. What would it take to actually fix the roads that the Engineering Quality Index labels as poor? And how many of those roads are there? And it turns out more than 25% of Milwaukee streets are labeled as poor condition. And there's a couple different reasons for that, like how we have gotten to this point right now. But the key thing is it would take, and this was the number Peter Burgelis wanted, $820 million to eliminate all those poor streets. $750 million, so almost all of that money, will be needed to fix streets that are local side streets in front of your house. So we're not talking about Oklahoma Avenue or Interstate 43. Fond du Lac. Even like a Prospect Avenue. Lots of people live on Prospect Avenue, but it's technically State Highway 32. We're talking about these side streets. That's where Milwaukee's problem is. Well, how we got here is in the 1990s, John Norquist, to his credit and now to his detriment, had this, I don't want to raise taxes. I want to make the city a livable place. Well, he did all kinds of policy things like, let's just not fund some local road repair. We'll save money. Mm. Well, now that bill is coming due, but it's also coming due as all these other streets have degraded. There was a problem kind of in the Northwest area and then early in Tom Barrett's tenure where they did special assessments for roads. So if the road was being rebuilt in front of your house, you were going to get a special fee for that. Well, a lot of people cried poor and were like, just don't rebuild the road in front of my house. So that created a bigger backlog. So the city started to tackle this in 2008 with the vehicle registration fee. They've increased the vehicle registration fee now to $30 a year. But the hole is just so big that the list grows longer every year than getting shorter. So the city is, to its credit, doing a good job with state and federal funding, replacing these major roads. The side roads are in terrible shape.
Generally, ignoring something is not a good way to sort of resolve it. As somebody who used to kind of lead these conversations, albeit in a suburb, these are important conversations because it impacts everybody who lives in your city and works in your city because they're driving these roads every day. I know there's a sort of a critical assessment, poor, very poor, okay. I'm simplifying because there's like really specific terms. Given the options available, registration fees, wheel tax, obviously some of the other options they can figure out asking for funding, which the state sort of ignores the local roads. What are we doing here? What are we going to do to sort of address this specifically?
That is the challenge. Kevin Muse, city engineer, laid out four options. None of them are good options. The city is spending $60 million a year repairing, rebuilding roads. But most of that money, because it's state and federal dollars, is going to these big roads. So you have to raise this local money. You can expand the vehicle registration fee. Well, Scott Spiker immediately was like, that'll be the last vote we take because we'll all be voted out of office. You can go begging the state for more money. They're not likely to give you more. For local roads, the state gives the city of Milwaukee $1 million every other year. They give the state lots of money to fix big streets, even the Prospect Avenue stuff. There's the local roads, you're on your own, and that's a problem across Wisconsin. There's also a transportation utility, but the Wisconsin Supreme Court, even in its liberal configuration, has struck that down. Kevin Muse floated the idea of using that to charge on a per parking space basis. The idea there is these big Amazon trucks we see that are now going on our side streets, delivering us stuff. They're doing more damage, but they're not registered in the city of Milwaukee. So the vehicle registration fee, they're not paying.
Oh. And
so there's just not many grid options.
Have you ever seen these stories? CBS has done a lot of these over the years on these vigilante road repairs where people do make art projects out of them on their own streets.
Oh, like paint inside of them and stuff on the potholes?
Yeah, they're sick and tired of all the non-activity on this issue.
That's actually a great thing to talk about because in the city of Milwaukee.
I know, that's why I asked.
You're a good host. There is no shortage of money to actually replace the potholes. There is a shortage of people reporting them. So if you have a pothole, you don't have to paint a phallic object on it like people are doing in other cities. You can just go to the city's form and fill it out, and it will eventually get fixed.
Where do people find that form?
It's on the Department of Public Works website. Okay. There's also the Click to Action smartphone app, but just search Milwaukee pothole repair. You will find it. It's a pretty easy form. You can even send in a photo. I do it a fair amount, and they actually get fixed.
Of course you do.
One down the street from my house, I got a whole series of potholes fixed recently.
Is it a totally different set of money when we talk about fixing sidewalks?
It kind of comes from the same pool.
Does it? Because I live in a neighborhood that, and pushing a stroller, do not put coffee Oof. In the cup holder, in the stroller,
no,
in my neighborhood, because that will fly everywhere.
Similar.
It is not shock absorbent, because it's the sidewalks are insane of how crooked and I never knew like where it comes from and how do they decide which ones they fix.
So going back to the Norquist era again, John Norquist wrote a book, so we kind of laid all this out in the 90s that, oh, we changed, we don't fix the sidewalks until they're a half inch apart instead of a quarter inch apart, and that saved us $500,000 a year. Well, that backlog, again, is now coming due. You can, again, report sidewalks that the different squares are different heights, but good luck getting a very fast repair. Potholes get fixed much faster.
Because they can actually grind the edge and make them smoother.
That's exactly what they
not
do.
Not perfect, but smoother. Or they can replace in some things. They can also, in some circumstances, assess the homeowners if they own the property.
Can they also just not plant maple trees that have huge roots that screw up the sidewalks?
I mean, we're talking about decisions made 50 years ago.
Yeah, short-sighted to say, hey, look at that cool maple tree. Oh, yeah, it disrupts all of it. It breaks our sidewalks up and makes life miserable in the city. All right, we're just getting warmed up with Jerry Magin. You can find his great work at urbanmilwaukee.com. Always a source for all things Milwaukee and sometimes beyond. That's Jeremy. He's going to be back after this message on 620 WTMJ.
Fixing the damn roads and so much more.
Everybody wants to be closer to me.
I want to be closer to me. I know that.
Yeah.
Oh,
I can't believe you're not going to go to Summerfest. I'm going tonight. I didn't go to all last weekend.
I love Summerfest. I enjoyed it for many, many years. Just my schedule's very tight.
Busy guy.
All right. A lot of engagements.
Another busy guy. Jeremy Janine, Urban Milwaukee. All right, let's talk about this. I wasn't aware that there was Milwaukee women part of this program. But as the Democratic Socialist in New York is very popular this week, talking about some of these radical programs, this, I think to some people, would be considered a very radical program, giving moms unrestricted cash payments to improve their lives. What do we know about the impact that this program has had on the women who are taking part of it?
Sure. Let's set the stage for what this is. The Zilber Family Foundation, the Milwaukee Foundation, contracted with the Bridge Project out of New York, so it's a mom-dommy import already, to bring this program to Milwaukee. The idea was the Zilber was going to fund it with almost $2 million for 2 years to low-income mothers in targeted zip codes. And those zip codes are the areas the Zilber Family Foundation serves already on the near west side, near north side, near south side. About 100 mothers wanted to just give them cash payments. And I'll pull them up the figures in front of me. $1,100 payment to prenatal mothers up front, then $750 per month for the first 15 months. And then they got additional money, and we'll talk about the city's role in this, $375 per month for the final 21 months. So you're giving mothers several thousand dollars for the first 36 years of your life. The Bridge
36 months.
First 3 years, 36 months of
child's life.
You have the child's life. You're actually starting the money shortly before the child is born. You have to be low income to qualify. The city of Milwaukee, led by Marina Dmitrievich, as part of this grand bargain on other stuff, contributed $350,000 in city money. It was essentially some federal funds that they did a sleight of hand trick. But the city contributed public dollars to supplement this. There were some anonymous donors. So 122 mothers in Milwaukee are getting this money. I'll give you some quick figures on who they are. The average participant in Milwaukee's cohort is 28 years old. The majority of the participants identify as Black, 62%, followed by Hispanic, 34%, and White, 19%. 90% say English is their primary language. And just the requirements, they had to be at least 18 years old and less than 24 weeks into their pregnancy. They started receiving the stipends and pretty dramatic reductions in the amount of food insecurity that they're reporting. Went from 60% down to 50%, so you'd move that needle. And then housing insecurity dropped from, and I'm trying to get the number right in front of me, 60%, nope, that's not the right number. Well, anyways, 17%, sorry. 17% of women previously were reporting some level of homelessness or housing insecurity. That went down to 6%.
Oh, wow.
So a dramatic reduction there in people experiencing homelessness. Now, you'd expect that. You're just writing them cash, giving them cash. Marina Dmitrievich said, if we make these investments, we really can turn things around, and the metrics are outstanding. There is a full report that I encourage. If you're interested in this, actually read the report. It's got lots of details from the Bridge Project. They've really invested in tracking who these women are, what they're spending their money on. But it's a pattern they're seeing. The Bridge Project is now in 8 states. They're seeing the same pattern play out in other states. So it does cost money, but they're saying it's really efficient spending of money. There's not all these layers. You're just giving people money, and it shows they're making good decisions.
And no surprise to you, but Zilber has done some outstanding work in this community. I've known some of those folks for a long time. They step up when maybe other programs don't, or they hit a need that's maybe being missed. And I don't often agree with her, but Marina Dmitrievich, I think this is a sort of way to address a serious issue. Help some moms, help certainly help their children sort of move past poverty and sort of maybe set their course on the straight and narrow.
Yes. And so this is a 3-year program. We're 1 year in. So we only have kind of this early data now. The Bridge Project's been doing it for a little bit longer in New York City and some other places. So it'll be really interesting to see kind of what happens in these next 2 years. Do the mothers continue to spend the money? Wisely seems like a judgmental word. Do they spend it in a way that improves their lives? So far, the answer is yes. Does that continue? Examples otherwise suggest it should. Now the question becomes, does the city want to keep funding this? The Zilber Family Foundation has made it clear they want to continue with this, but to really make an impact, they need other partners to come with them.
Because I would imagine you also want to expand the program, if it's working, to more than 122 women.
Yes, absolutely.
Which would obviously take more money.
Baby steps.
The one thing I want to point out, the Bridge Project noted that their average participant has an income of $16,800. In Milwaukee, it's only $7,000. So a lot of those women that are participating just aren't working and are like their whole household isn't working and need that income. The households in Milwaukee are also larger, and they don't quite know exactly why that is. But in Milwaukee, there's just more kids in the household.
Any movement on my idea last time to put that stupid boat up against the calling on the end of Wisconsin Avenue? Is there a sort of movement forward on that?
We had a secret committee meeting while you were in Scotland, and we agreed to meet again.
All right. So there's progress there. Dumbass boat. All right. We are just getting...
You are on one today. You are extra cranky today.
All right. Is that cranky or is it just smart? All right. 11:30. We've got some more Jeremy, including an update on the Iron Horse Hotel, which I think is a fantastic property. We'll see where that's going to go. And some other great stories about local politics in Milwaukee and the stories that affect all of us who live, work, and play here. And, of course, Summerfest kicking up second weekend tonight. Oh, we are in the city talking city with Jeremy Janine. UrbanMilwaukee.com is where you can find his great work. Always on top of all stories. This one intrigues me because I've eaten at the Iron Horse. I haven't stayed there, but I've been around that hotel for events and stuff.
I've actually never been to the Iron Horse.
Oh, I don't know how it's sort of a cool place, but they've had a lot of financial problems. And you're going to give us a sort of an update on where they currently sit.
Yes, the Iron Horse Hotel, 500 West Florida Street. If you're looking for it, though, if you're at the Harley-Davidson Museum, look south. You see the big Iron Horse Hotel neon sign. In the winter, I always get a kick out of it. They just light it up to say, ho, ho. It's good Santa reference there. But Tim Dixon has been fighting off the Iron Horse Hotel owner and developer since 2021, has been fighting off a foreclosure lawsuit. He appears to have finally lost. A foreclosure judgment was entered against him on Monday. The 100-room boutique high-end hotel is now in the hands of its mortgage lender, which appears to be an affiliate of Goldman Sachs with this bundle of mortgages. And we get into the weird world of hotel finance there, but if that 2021 date probably is significant to you because a lot of hotels were in COVID-19 issues there. A lot of them were able to refinance their debt or returned, essentially gave the hotel to their lender. Dixon tried for a long time. He did Chapter 11 bankruptcy to try and restructure his debt and just never was able to pull that off. It was $24 million in debt. They even tried an auction. I think it was last year or 2 years ago. Couldn't get a bid to satisfy that debt. Now it could be headed for a sheriff's auction, and there is a receiver running the hotel at this point, which means there's another company involved that the court said, you take over now.
What if, like, how far is Harley from there? Not far.
Not
right?
far.
The Harley-Davidson Museum? Yeah, it's real close.
I wonder if they could, again, this is just conjecture. I don't know anything about anyone making an inquiry, but that seems like the property they could sort of...
Do you think they want to get in the business of hotels?
I don't know. I mean, they do a lot of innovative things, at least they're trying to sort of figure things out as a company and corporate identity. So
rent
maybe
it out for homecoming every year?
Hotels are a strange business.
Harley place up, you know?
Harley could end up the owner because a lot of hotels just, they have an owner, then they have an operator, and they're not always the same. That's been a unique situation at the Iron Horse. It's not part of a Marriott or Hilton or Hyatt. It's an independent thing. When it changes hands, it will almost certainly remain a hotel. It's in an increasingly good location, but it very well could get affiliated with that Marriott Autograph Collection or Hyatt Tapestry or something.
I love Marriott. I stayed at thousands of them over my 28 years on the road, and I think that would be just fine. I know some people don't like them, but I think they do a great job. And I think it should be a hotel. I think it should be have a viable.
I mean, what else would it be?
I don't know.
Apartments?
It's a big enough building. It's a 100-year-old, 120-year-old now warehouse that it could be converted to something else. But that's, if you're buying the situation, you're probably looking to get a deal on pennies on the dollar. You're not going to want to throw more money in to try and convert it. You want to just, it's operating today. Keep operating it, but without the debt that allows you to actually make money now.
You got a quick one before the break? Not the Riverwalk. I want to spend some time on that one.
Sure. Let's look at the council jumped off the trampoline debate. We teased this earlier. I forget if it was all three of us or Steve.
We've talked about it. This is the third week in a row that we've talked about trampolines.
All right. So we'll keep bouncing.
And I don't think my opinion has changed on it as far as.
You're enthusiastically in support of trampolines?
No, I just don't think it's that big of an issue inside of Milwaukee. I don't think the concentration of trampolines is very high.
I think you're right on that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Common Council outside of Peter Pagela seems to agree with you,
okay.
Kristen.
Right.
Quoting Alderman DeAndre Jackson, this is something that should be dealt with by homeowners and insurance companies. Steve's favorite socialist Alderman Alex Brower.
Mm.
What I don't want to see is another tool for the city's bureaucracy to punish people. So two different reasons to oppose this policy. Then Alderman Bregelis attempted to introduce a fine. There's already a $500 maximum fine. He wanted to make it a $300 minimum, which had Russell Stamper and others going, wait a minute, what? And so that the whole thing ended up getting held. It's going back to committee. We'll be able to discuss it at least once more, maybe a couple more times.
I will donate to a fund that takes the Alderman Bregelis, is that how you say it?
Yes.
To a trampoline park so he can get his trampoline fix and sort of understand what people, why they like them.
No, the bill isn't banning trampolines.
I know.
Just saying, like, putting more restrictions on where they can be placed,
I get it.
Et cetera.
But it seems anti-trampoline to me. I want him to bounce around for a few hours in the trampoline park to get his head right, because his head's clearly not right. He's thinking about stuff. Let me just put it this way. He's thinking about things that a lot of us don't spend a lot of time thinking about. Is that correct? Is that a good assessment?
Well, there was also the flag debate at the council meeting.
Which we'll
initiated
come back
by him.
Too.
Yeah, of course. Of course we will. Because that
so
story never
ends.
So
what do we do next, Riverwalk or flag?
Riverwalk. I enjoy the Riverwalk in Milwaukee, and there's developments.
All right.
Some not so good, including a connectivity issue that is troubling to me as a consumer of Riverwalks and a user of such things.
All right, so we get to that after
this.
When's
the last time you were on a Riverwalk?
I literally was at the Harbor District groundbreaking.
Of course you were, because you're Miss Events in Milwaukee. Kristen Bry and Steve on Point Taken on 620 WTMJ. Let me guess, a Summerfest band that I've never heard before, but people will enjoy tonight at our beautiful lakefront Summerfest.
Yeah, I think Greg and Jessica are getting set up. They're going to be broadcasting live from our Hello Windows and Doors mobile studio at Summerfest.
That's always cool. I miss that.
We haven't done that in a while.
Yeah, no one's asked.
You want to go do an on-location show somewhere?
No.
Yeah.
Yes, I do. I do want to. With you, yes. Of course. Any day, anywhere. Of course I do.
I don't think anywhere.
Well,
I think you'd have stipulations.
I would have lots of stipulations, yes.
You'd have green M&M bowl that you would request.
Oh, yes. I'm going to go that far? I only want the green one.
All right. Let's talk about the Riverwalk. As I said, there was groundbreaking on the Riverwalk in the Harbor District 2 weeks ago?
June 10th, I think, yeah.
So, yeah, 2 weeks ago. And there's something missing, though?
There it is. So, good news. Largest one-time ever expansion of Milwaukee's Riverwalk in its history.
That's cool.
4,300 feet. That's like 3/4 of a mile for those of you that are trying to do math in your head.
Tell people where it is so they can tell.
Yeah, absolutely. If you go to the east end of Greenfield Avenue, there is the Harborview Plaza, the park with the shipping container vertical slide, the new Komatsu campus.
Yep.
It'll run the whole way south along the inner harbor down to what is actually Kinnickinnick Avenue at the northern tip of Bayview.
Very cool.
So what seems like an absolutely great link. It's part of the city is, I mean, the downtown Riverwalk exists. It's several miles long on both sides of the river. The kind of remaining gaps are being filled in. But the city is now expanding the Riverwalk system out to the Inner Harbor, the Harbor District, and into the Menominee Valley, which fits and starts there. But it's going to happen at some point. Well, this is a major step forward, but there's this one problem that I keep trying to bring up in articles, and city officials are like, yeah, we're working on it, but there's railroad tracks that divide the middle of this Riverwalk segment. Little used railroad tracks, but the Riverwalk at the moment will not cross the railroad tracks. So you'll have to go the whole way, 2,000 feet down, and then you'll have to turn around and come back. Unless the city is just doing a little wink and a nod thing, and you can kind of walk over the railroad tracks, but there won't formally be a Riverwalk there. That's a question that remains to be answered.
How often are trains on the tracks?
once a week at most.
Oh, really? So it's, okay. So this, it's going to be a wink. No one's going to turn around and go back. They're just going to walk over the railroad tracks.
Safely.
Except, as we talked about in a prior segment, there are people with strollers. There are people that might be on bicycles.
Then it gets sort of problematic. Yeah.
The city has already lost a lawsuit almost 2 decades ago now about accessibility on its Riverwalk, which is why we have all these elevators added to it.
So I always get it. I haven't got one yet, but I probably get one. Why do I care about this? I don't go down there. Riverwalks, city walks change the dynamic of central city locations. Louisville, San Antonio, there's like many different versions of the same thing. They bring people, they allow them to see a city, and often it's the connectivity of the waterways to the business part, to the restaurants, to the bars. It's the cool part of coming to Milwaukee. You can walk, as you said, how many miles of this stuff? It's pretty awesome. And whether you live in the city or not, it doesn't matter. I'm sure most of our listeners come to Milwaukee for restaurants. I don't know how many
Bucks
times.
Bucks games.
Dozens of times in the last few years, we have a group of couples that we come to local Milwaukee restaurants, often ones we've never been to before. And then we go on the Riverwalk and just sort of experience the night when it's nice out. It's the cool part of coming to Milwaukee. So these stories matter for that reason. This is a tricky one because I got a railroad ripping through it. Railroads are typically not easy to work with. Trust me, I've worked with them or tried to work with them. They're not the best negotiators when trying to help the city do anything. They care about their own interests. They don't necessarily play well with others. Not indicting them, but these connection points are important, because when you can connect pieces of a city, all of a sudden you have people talking to each other again and experiencing things that maybe that neighborhood barrier stopped them from doing before. That's why this stuff matters. These are good things for cities, and that's why we should encourage this stuff.
Yes, when I come to the station, I take Wisconsin Avenue from the east side of downtown over here to the west side, and the one thing that is true in the summer is there are people on that segment of the Milwaukee Riverwalk right there. Oftentimes, I assume they're tourists, so we might not appreciate it as much as locals as we should, but the people that come and stay in Milwaukee, it's definitely a draw for them. It's a wonderful way to get out and see the river. A couple key things about this new segment that's being built: it will not look and feel exactly like the downtown Riverwalk. It's going to be wider, which should be nicer. It's going to be an extension of Harborview Plaza at the north end. It will also include bathrooms and a stage. So they'll have amenities, lights there.
Wow.
And then the most interesting thing is this is a former industrial river area, Inner Harbor area. So there's inlets, and that the Riverwalk is going to reflect those and allow you to walk down and actually touch the water in one spot.
Ooh.
Which is, when you're on the downtown Riverwalk, you're way above the water. This, you'll actually be able to get in touch with it.
All right, you sticking around for the last segment, or are we booting you
out? Yeah, we still got to talk about, the flag. We got to talk about the scooter
the
increase.
Flag. Oh, boy, here we go. Flag talk after this, 620 WTMJ.
Break your mama's back.
All right, a couple more fun topics with Jeremy Janine before we get out of here for today. Well, first, as our friend Peter on the text line has asked, how about all that use of the Lime scooters during Summerfest?
Absolutely. So we previously talked about how the Hop sees like a 30% boost in ridership. Lime scooters probably see even more than that, just anecdotally using my eyeballs and seeing them everywhere. We will get actual data on that about a month from now. The Department of Public Works does produce a report. Actually, one of the really interesting things they do with that report is they actually show where the trips are going. There's a visual service. You can probably see all the scooters head toward Summerfest and at night go away from it.
Do they get deactivated in any parts of the town anymore?
Yes, there are no ride areas. I believe the Riverwalk is one.
Yep.
Lakeshore State Park, I believe, is one. There's some no ride areas, and there's some no stopping areas. So, like, at one point, Marquette's campus, you couldn't stop the scooter there, but you could go through the campus on it.
Okay.
So that there are restrictions around the Henry Meyer Festival grounds for that. But, yes, heavy usage for them. I believe Lime is actually running a deal if you search for it online. I remember getting a press release about that, but I don't remember the specifics, so take advantage of getting a discount.
Got it.
It seems like I'm seeing more of them. Are they, like, flooding the market, is there a limit, right, that they can actually put on the streets, or is there not?
There is a limit, and there's also a minimum. And if they're good actors, so if they don't get complaints against them, they can actually get a boost, so they can add several hundred more scooters. They are required to somewhat equitably disperse them around the city. And by equitably, I mean like you don't have to place 100 near Northridge and 100 downtown. It's like for every 10 you place on the far northwest side, you can put 100 downtown. So you will see them across the whole city, but there's upwards of 1,000 of them on the streets just from Lime.
No kidding.
And then the other vendor, Spin, also has like 1,000 on the streets. Yeah. They're across the whole city.
I still have never ridden one.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
That's rather judgmental, I think. Have you ridden one?
Yes, of course.
Do you wear elbow pads and knee pads?
I do not.
Maybe you should start thinking about that, because people get injured on these things.
People absolutely get. Mike got injured last year. It goes back to the pothole situation.
Yes, in Kansas City, I had my. We went to Arthur Bryant's great barbecue place, and I was like, oh, we'll go right here. We'll take a scooter. It'll be real fast. And I took my wife through a little construction zone that I was prepared for, and she was not, and she has a scar to prove her frustration with me.
All right, so Jeremy, Janine, you're awesome about covering Milwaukee. What are some of the things you're looking at covering this week? Stories we'll talk about next.
Flag.
Oh, yeah, that stupid flag. Yeah, go ahead.
Give an update on the flag and then talk about what you're going to be watching out for this week.
Despite the way you set it up, I don't enjoy talking about the flag that much. And it appears several members of the Common Council also don't enjoy talking about it that much. We do have a flag task force coming, nine members.
Wow.
Three by the Common Council president, three by the Arts Board chair, who's Mullaly Coggs, Alderwoman Mullaly Coggs, three by the mayor. They now have 4 months to host a flag contest, rank the 10 best entries, and then do what I think will send the issue into a quagmire again, is send those 10 choices back to the Common Council, where they are free to ignore whatever this task force said. Common Council members reiterated two different themes yesterday. One, my constituents don't care about this at all. There was a group that said that. Mm-hmm. And then there were others that, yeah, people say this isn't important, but there are 70-some things on the agenda today, and this is one of them. And I'd like you to remind you, this is Mullaly Coggs, I'm paraphrasing, that we're focusing on those other 75 things as well.
Probably a good thing, smart thing to say. Could we just put a picture of the hone on a flag and just call it a day? Because that project, lighting the hone, all that stuff seems to be doing rather well. My friend Ian Abson always talks about it.
Well, that probably would do well for the Milwaukee County flag or the Wisconsin Department of Transportation flag. I'm sure that would open a whole new issue.
It's part of our city. Maybe it shows intergovernmental cooperation.
There we go.
How about that? That piece of this important.
So when this flag contest opens, I assume Steve will submit that idea.
You submit. You could start, because you're already looking for a graphic designer for your tattoo.
Yes.
Bob Donovan submitted a flag in 2016. So
yeah. How's his flag doing?
His city, his people's flag with the city hall just like plopped on there asymmetrically.
Well, this, you're talking about Bob Bauman that came up last year.
I don't
this
know.
Is Bob.
All the Bobs are just confusing.
Yes.
All right. Finishing up. 1 minute. What are you looking at this week?
The big thing I'm looking for later today, McGovern Park, there's a vote. This is Milwaukee County. Graham Kilmer is covering it for Urban Milwaukee. The county is in serious budget, dire financial straits, even with the new sales tax. So their solution for their senior center that's aging in McGovern Park is to combine it with affordable housing. There's a group of park advocates that are like, no, we don't want housing or any private use whatsoever in our park. The Crowley administration's response is, well, without this, the senior center is just going to crumble.
Yeah. All right. Always look forward to your visits. To all the texters who said I was crabby today. Crabby or just high-level smart? You be the judge. Kristen, we'll do it again tomorrow. I look forward to that. Bill McCosh and Joseph Pecky. We got, tempers are flaring. I'm just going to say that.
It's going to get hot, I think.
Going to be hot in here. Tip for Jazz, look for that song, those lyrics.